podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's podcast on the RIM reference model. Over the past year, members of a DIA working group worked to create a RIM reference model. The model has been developed with input from industry sponsors, product vendors, system integrators, and consulting companies. The model includes high-level data specifications, which form the foundations for RIM. In parallel, another working group updated an existing white paper to create a comprehensive overview of RIM challenges, processes, and considerations. In this podcast, we'll present a brief overview of these deliverables and talk with our team of experts about some interesting and important considerations in understanding and implementing the framework. Hi, I'm Kathy Clark, Director of Product Management with ENOV, and I've worked in regulatory information management and regulatory publishing for about 20 years. Today, we're joined by several experts on this topic. I'll ask our experts to introduce themselves now.
Hello, I'm Donald Palmer. I'm Senior Regulatory Affairs Director at IQVIA, and I'm responsible for connecting the business with technology.
Hello, everyone. I'm Venkatraman Balasubramanian. I'm Senior VP of Life Sciences at Orion Innovation, responsible for providing products and services for pharmaceutical companies. I have about 25 years of experience having worked in pharma industry before, now as a vendor and a system integrator. Glad to be part of this session.
And hi, I'm Pat Schaefer. I'm a managing director. I lead our regulatory and quality practice at FTI Consulting, serving life sciences companies.
Welcome, everyone. Our team served along with several other members as co-authors of the Regulatory Information Management white paper created by the RIM Working Group. And we've just published version 2.0 of that paper in May 2021. I'd like to start out today's session by talking about some of the challenges that led us to create these deliverables. And I'd like to ask Bala to talk about some important challenges that organizations face, both with RIM processes and RIM data, and how these two deliverables might help organizations to address some of these challenges.
As we all know, regulatory has always been a document-centric organization for a number of years. I think more recently, over the past decade or so, it's become more data-centric. And with data comes a lot of challenges in terms of understanding the end-to-end profile of data, both from a product perspective and from a regulatory perspective. And because of the growing needs of both the regulators as well as the industry, regulatory information has become more important from a data management perspective. And we have seen over the years, you know, industry has evolved. Companies have created bespoke systems and, you know, their own definitions of data with no standard nomenclature or standardization of terms and terminology that's used within the industry. So this has caused quite a lot of inefficiencies in the process, not only within an organization, but also when organizations come together from an interoperability perspective. So we, as a group, thought that it was the right time to really come together and kind of define an overarching model, an information model, also called a reference model, which started with actually understanding more of the business processes and all the data elements that are generated and consumed during that process, and kind of defining some of the details behind the processes as well as the data that's required to support the process. So the idea is to bring together efficiencies in not only data management from a compliance perspective, but also improving efficiencies and providing visibility into the product lifecycle from a registration and a regulatory aspect as well. So that's the main reason we kind of decided we should bring the team together. And it's been a great exercise over the past 2 years to bring a number of individuals together and develop this model, which we're going to present today.
Pat, I know when we were creating the white paper, you provided a lot of insight and expertise in the area of cross-functional integration. Can you talk a little bit about some of the challenges that organizations face pertaining specifically to cross-functional integration?
My view is that regulatory affairs, it's in the critical path to launch. You can't get a product to market until regulatory has done what it needs to do. And also, it's fundamental to really product release. So manufacturing and distribution is dependent upon information from regulatory affairs. Marketing, provides a lot of information for regulatory affairs in terms of how to register the product. Clinical, obviously, there's a huge information handoff. So I think doing regulatory information management effectively is really enabling these intersections, this flow of information, as Bala was talking about, from one group to another. You know, there's a very strong regulatory-centric approach, and that's what RIM is all about.
I know that not all of our listeners have had a chance to look at the white paper yet, or even maybe not aware that it exists. Can you provide a brief overview of the white paper, Pat?
Absolutely. The white paper, as was mentioned earlier, is a group effort. We probably had some 10 or more authors who all contributed best practices in 11 different domains. Some of these include regulatory intelligence, submission planning and tracking, labeling, advertising and promotional material, change control and variation management, really touching on many of the core regulatory capabilities. The process of putting this together was Herculean. We had a lot of content coming in with different perspectives. Individuals authored each section, and then as a group, we held weekly editing sessions and spent, I would say, almost a year actually going through and editing content, making sure that we're really reflective of those best practices to come up with a comprehensive final product.
And can you give some examples of how an organization or maybe specific roles within an organization might use the white paper?
Well, this goes back to the fundamental purpose of the white paper. It is very helpful, I think, for evolving companies. Companies that may have had one product in one market and haven't needed an effective regulatory information management solution up until now, this is an opportunity for them to come up to speed and understand the challenges, the tricks, the best practices, to give them insight into how they can implement a global regulatory capability that really hinges on management of all the information that attributes not only to the products themselves, but also to the registrations. The white paper also is very important for communicating expectations to vendors. I think after all the editing we've done, the principles are very well articulated, and it might be very useful for pharmaceutical and biotech companies to communicate some of these concepts, some of these expectations, to make sure that configuration of systems meet their expectations. And then finally, the reason we all participated in this exercise, our belief that a rising tide raises all boats. And if we can put the best practices in industry out there for the industry as a whole, I think we all align on the hope that this will allow the industry to bring life-saving or life-improving medications and therapies to patients faster. We're hoping to make a big difference.
Thanks, Pat. Our second deliverable is the RIM reference model itself. Bala, can you describe the RIM reference model for us?
Just to add on to what Pat was talking about. So the RIM working group started way back about 5 years ago with the intent of actually putting together a reference model. In that process, it was decided that perhaps a better context setting deliverable would be the RIM white paper itself. A version of that was published a few years ago, and we now have version 2.0. Subsequently, once we defined the overall capabilities, we decided that it's time for us to really sit together and come up with an information model to really, you know, achieve a few major objectives. One is to define a common nomenclature, so everybody uses the same terms and terminology, which in a sense is derived from common concepts, relationships, data and metadata within regulatory, and also other functional areas which may depend on regulatory for that information. The way we started was we started with process maps. We defined some higher level concepts and constructs and relationships. That was between 2019 to 2020. Subsequently, we had a major working session at the RSIDM in 2020, where we had about 50 plus participants from the industry, vendors, and system integrators who came together and provided the basic elements of a data model which addresses the needs of regulatory and other organizations. So once we started defining that, we had a number of sessions over a year between 2020 and 2021. And we had several iterations. It was a challenging and perhaps an interesting exercise where we tried different ways of addressing the information needs. And finally, we had a breakthrough when Don actually decided to capture all the data elements in a very structured format, which he'll share shortly. It's come a long way from where we started. It puts the stake in the ground in terms of what are the basic data elements that are required to support regulatory in its business process and also other functional areas which depend on regulatory. We have the whole concept of process and objects and data elements and so on, which Don will provide some of the details around that.
Thanks. That's a great lead into my next question, which is to ask Don to talk to us about the implementation of the RIM reference model. And I was not as extensively involved in the reference model as I was in the white paper. I look at it and there's a lot of data in the reference model. And I'm curious how an organization would go about making use of this information in their RIM implementation. Where would they start? What if they have a RIM system in place already? And also, what if they don't? Don, can you give us your thoughts on this?
One of the key aspects of the model is standardizing terminology and relationships between information. So this would be a good place to start. Get standards for your terminology. Make sure you understand them. You have good definitions. Make sure you understand the context in which that data resides, the processes in which they fit. If you're looking at existing RIM systems, a lot of what's already in the model have been already built into existing RIM systems. We did not start from a blank sheet of paper. A lot of them are already there, so the terms may need some adjustments. Some of the relationships might need tweaking, but a lot of it's already in place. Part of what the RIM reference model is doing is also extending what those pieces are. So that's another area that you would need to do or plan for in your implementation. If you don't have a RIM system, again, the existing RIM systems have a lot of this already built in. So you can go with one of the ones existing, standardize the data, again, standardizing the terminology as you go and put that into place. One of the other things that we've talked about here is that you need to really think of how you're going to source that information from other systems or other areas of the organization. So that's a key part of implementation as well.
So you need to identify the authoritative data source for all of these elements.
Yes.
And that's a key element to getting it right the first time.
Yep.
Pat, RIM metrics was another area that we covered in our white paper. And I think many of us are familiar with the Gens & Company world-class RIM survey. And if we look at the 2020 survey, this is a quote from the survey. Quality metrics are a challenge for most companies. So not surprisingly, Gens & Company identified a correlation between organizations with high world-class RIM score and the number of quality metrics they collect. Because, of course, in order to be able to improve a process, you need to be able to measure it. Are there any aspects of the reference model or white paper that could help a company define quality metrics for RIM?
Oh, absolutely. Actually, there's a tremendous amount in there. I think first and foremost, we need to talk about what is quality with respect to RIM. And quality in its broadest sense talks about meeting customer expectations. So if the patients or the provider or even the company is the customer, the expectations are speed to market, greatest efficiency. So quality really becomes an all-encompassing term. The white paper presents a hierarchical framework, which looks at three different levels. It looks at key performance indicators, those high-level metrics that the chief executive or the executive team might look at to say, have we met our goals for the last year? Have we succeeded? And Wall Street and all key stakeholders look at KPIs. But they don't do very much in terms of driving improvement. The next level down are the management review metrics. Those metrics that are captured frequently, probably monthly, management reviews them and then makes decisions on whether certain areas need improvement. Management review metrics might inform a continuous improvement project, or they might inform a change of strategy. So those are important. But even those don't really help with the day-to-day running of the business. Am I running a little behind in terms of authoring a certain section, or are we missing information? And now we're down in the operational metrics level, which is really, how is everything going today? Are there any constraints that need to be addressed in order to continue the submission development process or whatever process the regulatory team is working on? Other concepts introduced are things such as proactive versus reactive. We talked about KPIs, looking at the past performance period and seeing whether we've met our goals. On the other hand, proactive metrics might be able to look into, for example, the document management system to determine whether content has been progressing or reviews have been happening at the appropriate time. And if it looks like there's something that is not at the appropriate level or status, the group can be proactive and jump in and remove constraints or add team members or whatever it takes in order to get the job done on time. We also look at quality metrics in the pure sense of the term, right first time. How many unexpected questions is the health authority asking during the review period? Things like that are an indication of whether the submission is of sufficient quality or not. So we really talk about the broad range of metrics, and we also talk about some of the sensors, some of the fields and information within the RIM system that can inform those metrics.
That's interesting because one of my colleagues in the RIM space talks about metrics for the 99% versus metrics for the 1%, which you touched on, you know, with the upper management metrics. That's what really springs to mind, I think, when a lot of people talk about RIM metrics is, can I tell how many submissions did I do this year? But I think what you're alluding to is really that there are all these classes of metrics and they're all needed in order to control and improve the process.
Just to expand on that, part of this hierarchy is this concept of cascading, that those 1% metrics that you were referring to, which I like that concept, basically are driven by the data at the lower level, at the operational level. The operational level data rolls up and that will inform whether in fact those high level strategic targets were met or not.
Next, I have a question for Don. Don, you and I have worked together off and on for many years, and part of that time you've been with sponsor organizations and part of that time you've been with vendor organizations. So you have a great insight based on having been kind of on both sides of the fence. Can you talk a little bit about some of the areas where you think vendors and sponsors don't have a common understanding of requirements and goals and how the two deliverables that we've produced might help reach a common vision?
So if you're a vendor, you do want to try to make something that's different than your competition. So you try to make things that look different or operate different. However, there are some basic structural processes that really apply across the board in RIM, and that's the kind of thing we're trying to capture within the RIM reference model. And again, the simplest type of thing is being able to standardize the terminology. Most systems allow you to change the terms that they're using, and one vendor might intentionally have change the name of an attribute so that it looks different than another one. But standardizing these is one of the areas that can really help in getting us all to be part of a common language, if you will.
Yeah, just to add to Don's point, I mean, only if you have standardized way of naming things in terms of data definitions and formats and types and so on, you could have better approaches to AI and machine learning, which is obviously the next topic. But I think standards bring a lot of rigor, not only from a efficiency and integration perspective, but also in applying other types of algorithms, you know, going forward.
And I think there's also, standard mightn't be the wrong word, but the processes, the types of things we're actually doing in regulatory have a lot of commonality to them. And so matching the data, the standardized data with those processes is all very helpful, both in getting a standard that can deal with mergers and acquisitions, transfer of products between organizations, working with partners. Those are all situations where we really need those standards.
Years ago, when I used to work more with publishing, I noticed that a lot of vendors focused very heavily on new drug application marketing authorization processes and not so much on routine regulatory business as they might need to. Are there use cases that any of you can think of that vendors don't really acknowledge but are very important to sponsors?
I think it's more around change management, right? Change request or change control management is always a challenge. If you speak to any of the pharma, they'll say it's not the new drug applications that get you, it's the ongoing changes that get you, right? And managing information around that and having a centralized approach to managing that information is key. We believe that the reference model should take those activities also into account. And I think we have done parts of it. Of course, it still needs some more work, but we've at least initiated that process.
And there are different pathways to getting a product marketed. So identifying those, understanding the differences between those, and the information that's necessary to progress those would all be such areas.
Next, I'd like to shift a little bit and talk about artificial intelligence and machine learning. And as a member of the group who authored the white paper, I really felt that one of our most important and interesting discussions was around AI and ML. And we all agreed that although some organizations are saying they have a few capabilities in this area, most are still in the planning phase or maybe even just the wait and see stage for AI ML. Pat, if you looked forward to the next time we reissue the white paper or maybe the time after that, what kind of changes do you predict? What do you think will happen? I know you've been working with clients that have been starting to do this. Well, how fast do you think it'll happen? And is there any sort of low-lying fruit that can be addressed sooner rather than later?
You know, very interesting point. And I think back to the RSIDM conference a year and a half ago, and people were saying the industry just isn't ready for AI. The session actually couldn't identify any practical applications. Now, fast forward a year, year and a half, and actually Carrie Smithson is leading the AI working group. And we just came out of a session that had probably 20 or 30 different use cases. I think it boils down into two separate areas. There's AI that's being used to assess a narrative. And one of the use cases that I'm particularly fond of is using machine learning to take a look at health authority correspondence, whether it's an approval letter or the back and forth of questions and answers during the review process, the RTQ as it's called. And really using that wealth of information to better understand health authority expectations so that when the next submission comes along, that submission can be right first time. The content will be there, it will be sufficient, and it will have met the expectations based on that correspondence. So that's one example. There's also examples of using natural language generation to actually create content based on data that's currently in a structured format. The other part of AI and machine learning is just the pure analytics of it. We all know that the RIM systems are a wealth of data and metadata. And when you use or execute processes within the RIM over a long period of time, you start to build up a wealth of information that can be useful in terms of, for example, understanding for a particular therapy, for a particular health authority, it's going to take so long to get the submission approved. That helps with forecasting, or you might be able to better understand based on experience resourcing for a submission team and be able to know when you can anticipate the spikes of effort and activity to occur so that you can have a lean team up until that point and then add resources accordingly. Again, there's so much information in our databases, whether it's structured or unstructured, and we're just beginning to apply AI to tap the potential that sits within that information.
Just one other thing to add to Pat's comment is how AI machine learning can itself be used for improving data quality. I mean, we all focus on how it could improve decision-making, but there's a lot of potential in actually helping improve data quality based on patterns and definitions and so on. So there's quite a lot of work to be done using AI machine learning for data quality purposes as well.
And I want to jump in, Bala, because one of the things I did not say was that data quality is essential to effective decision support. So if people aren't using the processes or executing the processes according to plan, or if the content isn't where it's supposed to be, then machine learning isn't going to be effective. So you need data quality to do good AI, but maybe you can use AI to improve data quality.
It's a bootstrapping process, yeah.
I have one final question that I'd like to direct to Don. Don's already been touching on the importance of standardization and kind of ties back to the topic of IDMP. It's becoming increasingly important to almost everyone in the RIM space, whether they're sponsors or vendors or consultants, and certainly the regulators. Don, does the reference model account for harmonization with IDMP, or will that need to be a focus in an upcoming release? Where do we stand with that?
As you mentioned, IDMP really is a movement to standardize terms, and so is the RIM reference model. So those two things are very much hand in hand. IDMP really was built because we did not have a good way to identify the same products globally And so that got put together in order to enhance that capability, especially from a safety perspective, so that if you got an adverse event in one country using a certain product, could you expand that knowledge, that understanding of the issue to that product in other countries? The RIM reference model, we're looking again to be sort of a standard in that sense. There is overlap, certainly. The IDMP deals especially with the identification of the product itself, a little bit with the registration process, but it's more a data structure. The RIM reference model is looking at data in context, according to the processes that we actually use. And that's a little bit where the two, while there's a lot of overlap, there's a little bit difference in that sense, because the RIM reference model might use a certain approval date, but it gets used in different ways in different contexts. So approval date for a CTA application is not the same type of approval as an approval date for a marketing application. So there's overlap, but RIM extends in many ways what the IDMP does. We will have to partner with them in order to work with them to connect them up. However, the RIM reference model has not spent a lot of time working on the aspects that would be utilized by the IDMP data structures. So we've tried not to encroach on that because we can just make use of that.
Well, thanks, Don. And thanks to everyone on the panel for joining us today. For DIA's Regulatory Information Management Working Group, I'm Kathy Clark.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.